Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Thursday, September 29th. At first, I thought that was Ring of Fire, and I was really going to salute you for your psychic music tendencies on this program.
I could sense the Johnny Cash that I needed, and I pulled the wrong one then.
There you go. See, Eagle Scouts also have a psychic merit badge, apparently. Working from home can be a great arrangement, except for the times when it's not. I mentioned, before I forget, coming up later this hour, Wendy Strout from the Human Rights Campaign. And if you want to get in touch with the show, 715-388-7155. Working from home. I mentioned in the last hour that my wife worked overnight at the hospital, and I've got a daughter here visiting. So ever the good breakfast chef that I am, I made sure to leave out overnight some croissants, chocolate-filled croissants that were going to rise overnight. And then I had it timed to the minute, you know, when to put them in the oven, when to bring them out of the oven, had it timed for the commercial break. I thought somebody else was going to pull them out of the oven, but they must have thought that I was. And I hold up for you what should be golden, flaky croissants that are bricks.
Oh,
black bricks.
Oh,
I smelled something during the previous commercial break and immediately thought, oh, something has gone terribly wrong here. And I can't wait to set these back outside because they stink. Those are going to be my fluffy, flaky breakfast treats that nobody is going to enjoy now because I now have door stops. If anybody needs a door stop, I have created one. So
come on, Teddy had one job. Teddy just needed to take the croissants out of the oven. Come on.
You think the three-year-old would tell us, you know, one thing, one time, but no.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Teddy, it's not your fault.
It's totally my fault. I assumed something that I should not have. So that's on me. Getting back to headlines of the day here, I really had to take issue with the folks at Channel 8 in La Crosse, WKBT, for the way that they framed a news story yesterday as it relates to the third congressional district debate. And the article and the news story say congressional candidates Brad Paff and Derek Van Orden still at odds over a potential debate. And, you know, talks about how no debate has been set up yet, that, you know, Van Orden says this, Paff says that. No. Channel 8, News 8000, whatever you go by these days. Do not both sides this. Paff and Van Orden are not still at odds about the debate. They never were at odds. Reported correctly, Derek Van Orden refuses to take part in a traditional debate format, one that has been well regarded, one that has been regularly embraced by Republicans and Democrats year after year after year. And that's all really that you have to say. That's still a straight news story. You're not taking sides by pointing out that Van Orden refuses to take part in a frequently used traditional debate format. What you could have done is gone a step further and said, you know, Van Orden has been demanding something more like a reality show where a contentious crowd can ask quote unquote questions, usually loaded with misinformation, that has to be corrected by the moderator or the candidates with, by the way, no guarantee that the moderator or the candidates will do that. And that just allows the misinformation to take root. Whereas a traditional debate, an actual debate, involves a moderator and usually journalists who ask well-researched questions that don't contain misinformation. And then they do follow-up. If a candidate gives an incomplete answer, tries to filibuster the question, or put something out there that's just not true, and they can correct the record. But that's not what Van Orden wants. And so he's been insulting journalists, insulting the media this whole time, that it's all some kind of a conspiracy. You're not taking sides, Channel 8, if you write more accurate copy that reflects Van Orden's refusal to face questions from experienced journalists. Stick up for your craft. Stick up for your talents and your experience. Tell the voters what's really going on with a candidate who's relying on TV commercials rather than facing hard questions about a record that could be seen by many as disqualifying. He doesn't want to take those questions. He wants to do the slick TV ad where he looks like the guy next door, just a regular Joe who, you know, served in the military, does not want to tell you about his role at the insurrection on January 6th on the Capitol grounds. He does not want to have to explain again why he sexually harassed two women by exposing another man's genitals to them. He does not want to face questions about the way that he, the technical term I believe is, freaked out when he went to a library and saw a display of books that embraced, you know, diversity, especially for the LGBTQ audience community. And he did not want to explain why he tried to bring a loaded gun onto an airplane. He's running away from the debates, and that needs to be spelled out. He's not at odds. Half is not at odds. He's chicken. That's all it is. We'll be back. Talk about the human rights campaign after this. You're up north.
Because you're mine. I walk the line. Because you're mine.
Do you remember? All right, we get set to wrap up a month that probably has more songs about it than any other. Again, we'll be off on Friday and Monday. Best of shows will air, and we will see you again come October. But for now, while we've got one more show to put in the books here, we want to visit with Wendy Strout. She's the Wisconsin State Director for the Human Rights Campaign, a group of more than 3 million members and supporters dedicated to ending discrimination against LGBTQ plus people and realizing a world that achieves fundamental fairness and equality for all. Prior to joining Human Rights Campaign, Wendy was Wisconsin Field Director for the AFL-CIO. She is also the former Executive Director for Emerge Wisconsin, which I technically describe, I think correctly, as a group of rock stars who train Democratic women to run for office. Wendy Strout, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you. Yes, you are right. Emerge is, has a bunch of rock stars that are in office, leading programs. It's an amazing group of women. So thank you for having me. Thank you for having me here.
My pleasure. So let's fill in the blanks a bit more for folks on Human Rights Campaign. While I gave that top line description that, mm-hmm. that you provide about the group, it's been around for about 40 years now or so. Can you talk about its mm-hmm. its basic, I don't know if you want to say its basic day-to-day work, or if you want to start with anything extra or different that you do during this time of year when there's an election cycle. So what mm-hmm. can you tell folks about the work that Human Rights Campaign does?
So the Human Rights Campaign, I mean, really there's a lot that me and my colleagues do to further equality. I mean, we have a great program here, that's called Welcoming Schools, that teaches allyship, teaches anti-bullying to elementary schools and going into secondary, to high schools and junior high. We have a program that works with HIV and we have a transgender justice initiative. So there's a lot that we do. My team on the ground, we work on the legislative and political side. So we work in coalition with our partners to fight bad legislation and pass good legislation. But this time of year, we are really working hard to elect pro-equality candidates and making sure that we are supporting and endorsing candidates who are going to, really support, equality and really support equality for LGBTQ plus people.
We are at a point in American history, unlike most others, where we saw an abrupt turnaround in progress. What first was described as, I'd say, whiplash. You had in 2008 mm-hmm. the election of the first Black president. You had in 2015 Same-sex marriage was made legal by the U.S. Supreme Court. And then in 2016, we thought we were on the verge of electing the first woman to be president of the United States. Then came the whiplash. But I guess, now it's probably better to describe it as backlash, that that a whole bunch of people who, for whatever reason, said this, all of this progress is too much and we want to go back to whatever it is that the right wing is embracing. Obviously, that's been a body blow to so many people. What's it been like these past 5 years or so, trying to gain back some ground that some other people were happy to tear away?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a big fight, really to protect what we have and to continue fighting for more. And actually, the 2016 election, after that election, HRC really really made the strong investment in the battleground states, like especially the blue wall, like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, where we have staff directly on the ground, working daily, working year round on building relationships, building infrastructure, really engaging people in the work that we're doing, and electing good people, passing good legislation. And so it's been, we've seen that fight taken from the federal level to the state level. We've had you can just see this last legislative cycle, just even in Wisconsin, has been just attacking children, attacking transgender kids, really trying to find really find the boogeyman. And, it used to be same-sex marriage, and now it's like, well, what are we... let's attack trans kids. Who else are we going to other? And it's heartbreaking. And it's like, to me, this election is really about protecting trans kids, because they do not deserve to be the point of attack from the right wing extremists.
We're talking to Wendy Strout, Wisconsin State Director for Human Rights Campaign, and. When you mentioned the relationship building that goes on out there, we've had similar conversations with people from other groups or campaigns or what have you. And it's all absolutely true and necessary that, things can get better one conversation at a time. But you're also up against an immense right-wing media ecosystem with, a couple of famous individuals who talk to millions, if not tens of millions of people per day or per night. Doing this one conversation at a time is arguably, more as important or as effective. But I'm also reminded that when I tried to help somebody who was running for governor, and I thought for sure he was going to get the votes of everybody he talked to. But you can only talk to so many people. So tell me more about not just the individual conversations, but what you can do on that larger mass communications level to try to confront hate and division.
And that's a great question, because, it is about showing, having those conversations and encouraging other people to have those conversations with their family members. And so, have a digital program going on in Wisconsin. We do have one nationally. And really it's about making sure people, educating people and putting more people out front and telling the stories of those people affected through media, making sure that they're hearing from these transgender kids, making sure, that just want to play sports or just want to be able to go to school, and use the bathroom. It's about telling the stories of the parents who are supporting their kids. It's about telling people who, want their marriage, are happily married and want to continue living their life and being married and being out there and being able to not hide their love for their partner, just like, straight people do, and being able to, tell the story. So it's like telling the stories and getting more and more people comfortable with, things that they don't know, and putting more people out there, and more people that tell the stories, the more people say, hey, these people are real people. This could be my neighbor. this could be my sister, this could be my uncle. And it's really just about continuing to share the stories and getting those out there so that then that sparks conversations between family members, that sparks conversations between neighbors. And like, hey, you know, did you see this? Hey, this is what I've learned. You know, this is what I've learned about, you know, about how this person is being affected by these attacks on them. So it's really just kind of it's really about storytelling. It's really about telling people stories.
Which is really important from people who have been through such an ordeal, but then to ask them to, you know, step up and do even more and share their story can do a lot of good. And thankfully, some people are willing to do that. And they're willing to address people's questions or sometimes their misinformed statements. And so hopefully we can tackle some of that during our time together as well. When we talk about youth, for example, and, you know, gender identity, sexual identity, you know, even making, you know, transitions in gender, I think the baseline talking point is that in some people's minds, nothing about this, it seems, should happen until they're 18 and a consenting adult, and anything that's done that is supportive or encouraging or even just educational. I'm not even going to get into the whole ugly grooming thing, but just that they're saying that it's improper. Talk about the level of propriety in helping children understand what they're feeling.
Well, I mean, so there's been this, you know, it's been out there where it's like, oh, kids are having surgery and everything. There is until kids are 18, nothing is done that is irreversible. So when we're talking about gender affirming care, we're talking about sometimes it's just as simple as a name change. It's sometimes as special as different as the, you know, changing the clothes they wear. So they feel comfortable. Sometimes it's just changing their pronouns and using the proper pronouns that the child prefers. And sometimes it does include hormone blockers, which prevent puberty from coming on. Again, that's not irreversible. And so you have this big scare. You know, they're trying to say that, oh, parents are forcing their kids to get surgery. Nothing is done that with children, you know, without one consenting with their, you know, consulting with their doctor, nothing's done that is irreversible. And it's just very, you know, simple things that really help a kid feel comfortable and living, being able to live how, you know, their authentic self. And, you know, the extremists would have you believe that we're going to, you know, that there's a lot of surgery going on, and there's not. It doesn't happen until you know, they're adults, and then even as adults, sometimes that doesn't even happen. It's, you know, it's again with consultation with doctors. It's, you know, what is, you know, how, you know, what, how, it's every person's transition is different, and it's on their own time frame, and it's just, you know, the kids are not going around getting surgery. It's gender affirming care. Again, could be just as simple as a name change, could be as simple as changing dressing, changing how they dress. So,
and also pronouns, like you said, and boy, oh boy, there is just something about pronouns that is triggering for people. I mean, you had, I'm looking at one article, for example, where Tennessee legislators passed a bill that protects teachers who refuse to use a student's correct pronouns. I don't know how that got to be the line, Wendy, but that certainly seems to be one that is a bridge too far for people for reasons I guess I just don't understand.
I think we're seeing just people just trying to, you know, there's just been a lot of the loud minority that are just trying to grasp at things and trying, feeling some, you know, I have no explanation actually as to why that is an issue. But I mean, we're looking to make sure that we're protecting and electing people and putting out the message there that everyone should be able to live their authentic life, and, you know, making sure that we're electing people that are going to protect that.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I would not put you in a position of trying to speak for the very people who are trying to, you know, keep people down for trying to be, like you said, you know, true to themselves. Wendy Strout's with us from the Human Rights Campaign, the Wisconsin State Director. We will talk more about the issues in schools and then in the greater community coming up after this break. You're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Welcome back to Up North News for Thursday. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Wendy Strout, Wisconsin State Director for Human Rights Campaign. And we're going to talk a bit about the election campaigns coming up in just a second here. Before I left the topic of LGBTQ plus youth and the community and education, I did want to reference back to the State of Education address that was made by Dr. Jill Underlie last week. She spent a lot of her remarks talking about the need to create conditions for learning that are inclusive for everybody. And she went on, I won't get into all the details, but she talked about how good this is for students. It is basically, she said, it's suicide prevention. You know, pronouns save lives. And the Republican candidate for governor, Tim Michaels, basically, you know, mocked that for reasons, you know, that we can get into in just a bit. But let's stick to Dr. Underlie's remarks, Wendy, about, you know, what it is to have a state superintendent speak so frankly about an inclusive and welcoming learning environment.
I mean, it's, like you said, it is life-saving for kids. I mean, we have this amazing program called Welcoming Schools, which teaches allyship, teaches anti-bullying, and creates a safe learning environment for all students. And that's, you know, really what kids want, and that's what parents want. Is they want their kids to be able to learn. And if you are, you know, being bullied or you're not being supported, it's not an easy learning environment. And so I think that's what everybody wants. And it's great to have a superintendent who supports that type of environment where people can live authentically, where they can learn, you know, while also being who they are. You know, it's, you know, growing up is tough, and we want to make it as easy as possible for kids to be able to learn and create an inclusive learning environment.
You would think after all these years of finally recognizing and calling out bullying, we'd be better than this. But instead, we have a political class in this country that is just in a massive embrace of bullying as a way of politics and, frankly, as a way of policy as well. You know, contrast that with somebody like Governor Evers, who was state superintendent for many years mm-hmm. and, you know, is now running for re-election. From a Human Rights Campaign standpoint, can you talk a bit more about your own process of making endorsements and the reasons why you do and the policy ramifications of that?
Almost definitely. You know, Governor Evers is one of the most pro-equality governors we've had. I mean, his first act as governor was to pass a non-discrimination law policy for state employees. And, you know, that's just the next step to, hopefully we're looking to expand our non-discrimination policy in the state to include gender identity. Right now we have a policy that is just cover sexual non-discrimination law that covers non-sexual orientation, but we're looking to expand that. And we make endorsements based on, you know, champions and whether we, you know, they support equality for LGBTQ plus people. And right now our priority is re-electing the governor so that, and also protecting his veto pen, because we've seen what a horrible legislative cycle we had this last year. And if it wasn't for the governor's veto, there would be a lot more harm done in the state, especially to transgender kids. And one of our big goals is re-electing him, re-electing the Attorney General, Josh Call, and really making sure that we are focusing on, turning out our quality voters to support these pro-equality candidates. And there's over 700,000 pro-equality voters in Wisconsin that have been identified. And we're just continuing to talk to them, turn them out, let them know who the pro equality candidates are, who, you know, who we're supporting in the state legislature. And also, you know, honestly, at the federal level, who's going to support there? Who's going to support them, or who's going to let them know who, you know, their standpoint? Like Ron Johnson, you know, let's talk Respect for Marriage Act. Ron Johnson refuses to let people know where he stands and doesn't think the voters get to know where he stands on an issue. Where we know his opponent, Mandela Barnes, very supportive of the Respect for Marriage Act, Respect for the Equality Act, which would protect LGBTQ people across the country. And so it's really just a matter of who is going to support our community. And that's how we make our endorsements.
In our last hour, we played a new soundbite from Senator Ron Johnson offering, again, the word salad that he puts forward on same-sex marriage and his ever-shifting position on that, among other things. And I did not want to take up your time having to listen to him once again try to explain away, you know, why he has lied about the issue and why he's now opposed to work that Senator Tammy Baldwin is doing to try to enshrine marriage equality into law. But to keep it on rather getting people to turn out and vote, that actually is not as easy and obvious as it sounds to people like you and me and our listeners who engage with politics or news or current events to some degree every day. There's still so many people, Wendy, who either only vote in a presidential election year because they think it's the only one that counts, or they still just haven't gotten around to voting at all. So for all of the work you do much of the time about advocacy and education, I would think that right now it's more of a get out the vote effort and try not to take a single ally for granted, because an ally just isn't as much of an ally if they stay home on November 8th.
You're right. And we're working in coalition with several partners to make sure that not only are we talking to voters, but we're turning them out and educating them, making sure they're registered to vote, making sure they know the voting process, and making sure they're knowing about the changes in some of the voting laws. But it's about really, you know, what we talk to voters about is, you know, this is an election where, you know, you're, you know, really being able to live freely is on the line. You know, we heard just Governor DeSantis from Florida tell people that if Tim Michaels is elected, he's going to run Wisconsin like Florida. And Florida's a mess. And it's really about taking... Florida's taken away so many rights, and we don't want that in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, you know, we're a purple state for a reason, because we vote for people who are going to support and live that Wisconsin value and, you know, move things forward. And if we, you know, elect, and so it's about, you know, telling voters about, if you don't turn out and vote, this is what you're going to get. We're going to be like Florida. And Wisconsin does not want to be like Florida. I know that. No matter if they're Republican or Democrat, they don't want to be like Florida.
Amen. you know, and again, this was something that Senator Johnson alluded to, but I just want to cover a broad perspective. And it's this feeling that, well, just because Roe v. Wade was overturned, it doesn't mean that Obergefell is ever going to be overturned, even though Justice Clarence Thomas called for it explicitly in the Dobbs decision repealing Roe. So, is it fair to say that for Human Rights Campaign and other allies, is it fair to call it a sense of urgency in terms of either having the work that Tammy Baldwin's bill, having that work brought to completion, or at least, you know, trying to stave off supermajorities in the legislature that can override a Governor Evers veto? Am I right to say that because of what Clarence Thomas said, it's only ratcheted that sense of urgency many people feel?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much concern, and you cannot take it. We've seen with Roe, with the overturning of Roe, you cannot take anything for granted now. You know, you would think that these things that wouldn't pass into law could not be overturned, but, you know, people are, you know, very concerned, and yes, there's a sense of urgency, especially, you know, both at the federal level, but at the state level. And I don't know, and, you know, one thing we try to educate people on is how that, you know, your local elected officials, how much of an impact they have. So that's why we're doing a lot to educate people about our down ballot candidates, like our state representatives, our state senators, and the impact they will have, especially protecting Governor Evers' veto. But yes, there is a sense of urgency, and it's just making sure we're educating everyone to not take things for granted so they turn out this November.
And then beyond that, once the election is done and we return to everything else about our daily lives, Human Rights Campaign has a website and a web page entitled Resources. And Resources is right there in their top banner. And it talks about tools for equality and inclusion on just a host of topics. It looks like you've really created a library that anybody, and I do mean anybody, can go for either education, help, encouragement, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I mean, my colleagues, I have amazing colleagues who do a lot of research, put a lot of great information together, provide that for, we have several coming out publications. We have publications for parents, you know, trying to support their kids. We have publications like, you know, coming out in a religious setting. And, you know, because unlike people, some people don't, you know, think that LGBTQ people are not also, you know, religious. We are. But, it's, you know, so we have all kinds of publications and resources for people to, you know, even learn about, you know, how they can come up themselves, depending on how they identify. And I encourage people to visit our website. It's hrc.org. You know, you'll find so many more resources, so a lot of resources, and a lot of what we do, it's not just political, it's not just legislative. There's a lot that my colleagues in the foundation do and in other departments. But I know after the election, we're also gearing up for our next legislative cycle too. So we're always gearing up and always working towards equality, making sure we're protecting people and being able to, people can live authentically.
Yeah, I mean, that work never ends. I mean, the resources, just looking at the top of the page right now, has things that people need to know about monkeypox, fatal violence against transgender and the gender nonconforming community. Is PrEP right for you? A municipality database, your elected officials, a scholarship database. So there's all of these things for daily life. But, you know, as you say, Wendy, that daily life is always affected by policy. And so, I mean, you have to monitor and basically be active in 50 different states with legislatures that, you know, run the spectrum, not just in terms of partisan control, but how much time they spend in session and everything else. This is no small matter that you guys are doing.
It is not. We have a great legislative team, and I have colleagues across the country, not just in priority states, but in the southern states, and you know, all across the country, we're monitoring and making sure that we are fighting to protect LGBTQ equality. Mm-hmm. And one thing I just want to add that we are doing this election cycle, in addition to electing candidates, is we're working to protect democracy, because don't know if you realize democracy is on the line with this election as well. And we're actually doing a Saving Democracy training next Thursday that people can join. It'll be virtual. And it'll be a great way for people to learn how, you know, what's going on, some of the policies, how they can help other people get out and vote, and how they can help people protect this democracy that we have.
How can they find out more about that or get signed up?
Just go to our Facebook page or go to hrc.im/mobilize. Sorry, hrcwi.im/mobilize. And you'll find information about our trainings and some of the other activities that we're doing. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find us everywhere on social media.
And if anybody wants to get involved further, I also see a Get Involved page on the website for everything from a newsletter to finding events to, you know, contributing. There's no lack of ways that you would help people get involved.
Exactly. There's so many ways, and we encourage you to participate. There's a lot of ways to get involved.
Great. Wendy Strout, Wisconsin State Director for the Human Rights Campaign. Again, my great thanks. It was great to visit with you. Looking forward to getting more updates on all your activities in the future.
Thanks, Pat. You have a great day. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. You as well. We will wrap up this hour's conversation after this. You're up north.
The falling leaves drift by the window.
You found another September song, did you?
The autumn leaves.
It's autumn leaves. And Aaron found it.
It works. It's getting there. I saw the fall color report, and there are definitely parts from Barron County northward where they're just about halfway through peak already. So I suppose that makes sense. It's getting to be that time.
It is.
But you're doing this, and I'm just like, why don't I just shut up and let Nat King Cole just take it from here? Because, I mean, anytime you get a chance to hear that voice, you should just let it go. Let it roll. I have come to the point in the political year where we understand that if Congress is meeting and if legislatures are meeting, certainly not in Wisconsin, but elsewhere, that, you know, a lot of legislation doesn't get done, and that, you know, but bills are still put forward to make a statement. And that happened in Congress last week, or at least in the U.S. House, when it came to the topic of police funding. And, you know, again, we have to come back to this whole notion of, you know, defund the police, which was never about starving police resources, but taking some of it that might have been to, I don't know, buy a tank and maybe invest that money instead into areas where, you know, you could have more community involvement and intervention. In other words, the kinds of things police themselves have been asking for decades. And that is always what I have thought is one of the most disingenuous things of the past couple of years since George Floyd was murdered by Minneapolis police, is that police and their allies suddenly got a complete case of amnesia about how much they said, you know, we could actually have some of our resources put to better use. We need help. We need more people who are trained in mental health, for example, and other things like that. But now suddenly it's turned into this political football. So the House of Representatives last week, with a large bipartisan majority, voted to approve a measure that, if it were to pass the Senate, gives $60 million over the next 5 years to law enforcement agencies, small ones, those with fewer than 125 officers, to do things like purchase body cameras, provide de-escalation training, and improve recruitment and retention. Take a big swig of coffee here for a second here. Did I mention the three-year-old made me sick again? I didn't mention that on air, did I?
You mentioned it to me, but you have not mentioned it on air yet.
This now marks the third time in 12 months that I see that beautiful little boy, but he's got a runny nose, and a couple of days later, so does Grandpa. So got a bit of a tickle in the throat here. So it could not be better timing that we will not have a live show tomorrow, put it that way. Anyway, it's called the Invest to Protect Act. It passed the House overwhelmingly, 360-64. And again, on a bipartisan vote, there were 55 Republicans who voted against it, 9 Democrats who voted against it. And the Wisconsin congressional delegation was split as well. You had Congressman Tom Tiffany from up north, who frequently tries to tie, well, basically anybody with a progressive bent to the defund the police movement. And yet he voted against this measure that would have funded or provided some extra funding to the many small police departments in his district. Now you also had, you know, people from the most progressive wings of the party of the Democratic Party, like Mark Bocan, who voted against it in part because he had questions about the bill that he said weren't addressed through the committee process. But House leadership wanted to put it through as a way to make sure that voters understood that there is every desire to have law enforcement funded to the proper level that's needed for any given community, not to starve them of resources, as Republican legislators have done in Wisconsin, but also not to go to the extreme. And like I said, I mean, tank sounds like a little hyperbolic, but there are a couple of police departments that actually have, you know, the equivalent of that with a little battering ram on there. And again, maybe it's needed there, but there have been the news stories about some more mid-sized departments that, you know, have equipment that, you know, came from Iraq or Afghanistan and might never get used, but it made, you know, somebody in legislative politics feel good to authorize that level of spending. And all we're looking for is a little perspective here, folks. That's all I think anybody's looking for, is just the right size budget, the right size resources, the right size amount of officers. And so, for example, in the state attorney general's race, you have the Republican Eric Toney running against the Democratic incumbent Josh Call. And Toney wants to give the state attorney general's office direct power over law enforcement in the city of Milwaukee. Again, overkill. That's basically a tank and a very, very unnecessary one. And he got into a bit of a match on Twitter, of all places, with the mayor of Milwaukee about the level of funding for officers and the number of officers. And, you know, the mayor, Cavalier Johnson, you know, again, making clear what has been apparent for the longest time is that, you know, Republicans could do better by law enforcement around the state. And it's not enough to simply vote for budgets that embrace austerity and force you to cut basically everything else except police. And that's been the stance of many a Republican lawmaker, is to penalize cities and counties that cut back on law enforcement funding, knowing full well it means that that money's got to come out of every other city employee's pocket, or you're plowing the roads less, or you're closing parks, you're not having recreation programs for the kids, and what have you. Again, it makes all the political sense in the world if you just want to play crass politics with the police budgets in your city or county. But it's not what we're looking to have done here. So again, when we talk about everything from eliminating cash bail, which would actually make things safer because judges would then have better discretion on whether somebody should stay in jail because of the risk they pose, you know, whether it's that or whether it's taking care of, I don't know, a record $5 billion surplus that the Republican legislature has been sitting on now for what, 5 months at least here?
Come on, Pat. We only learned that it was going to be $5 billion like a month or two ago. It was only
when they left for their 10-month paid vacation, they knew it was at least $3 billion. And they chose to squander it, to sit on it, hoping to give it all away in corporate tax cuts next year if Tim Michaels wins the governorship and our police departments will again be caught in this tug of war of too much support in some areas, frankly, not nearly enough in the things that we really need. Carolyn Fiddler from Courier Newsroom is up next. You're up north.
Start to fall.